This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. This week, people from rural communities in the four Northwest states met in Coeur d'Alene to trade stories and strategy. These people are trying to solve disagreements in their towns about managing federal forests, about rural economies, about access to public lands. In many cases, the participants have fought long battles. What they have in common is they've committed to problem-solving models as a way of bridging their differences.
It's important because it's bringing people together. They're talking to each other and beginning to build a network of people who can solve problems, because Washington certainly can't these days.
John Freemuth is a professor of public policy at Boise State University and one of the conveners of this conference.
Well, what they essentially do is come to agreement on how to do things like protect watersheds, get some trees off the forest that help the economy, but it's done in the name of restoration, not in getting the cut out. Road issues. Now, they can't make policy, but they can create a network of people. The Forest Service can attempt to adopt what they've got, and then you've got political cover.
Freeman says Idaho is one of the leaders in the Western Collaborative Movement with 8 or 9 active groups. In North Idaho, the Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative convenes in Boundary County. The Panhandle Forest Collaborative focuses on the Idaho Panhandle National Forest. There's also a Shoshone-Benoit Forest Collaborative. In Washington, there's a group that focuses on the Colville National Forest. One of its members is Mike Peterson, the director of the Lands Council in Spokane.
It really started when Dwayne Vaughan of Vaughan Brothers and Tim Coleman of Kettle Range Group and myself were having a discussion about what we each needed or wanted. He said, "If we could get 4,000 acres of some kind of logging every year and you could get 100,000 acres of wilderness, could we work on that?" And that kind of started it.
The Colville Group is sometimes cited by elected officials for its success in bringing people with different interests together. That's not to say everything is kumbaya when collaboratives convene, says Will Whelan. He works for the Nature Conservancy in Boise and is a member of the Idaho Forest Restoration Partnership.
So the people sitting at these collaborative tables don't necessarily agree with each other, and actually some of them do have a history of being in court on opposite sides. But what they found is by focusing on things that they can agree on, they can actually get a lot done. So what they most often agree on is projects that help the ecological condition of the forest, that tend to be a little closer to town in areas that already have roads, that focus on using the proceeds from timber sales to help restore streams and repair roads. By thinking about how they can serve each other's interests, they actually come up with well-rounded projects.
About a year ago, a group called the National Forest Foundation studied why people participate in these collaboratives. The foundation says it's a nonprofit group that works with the Forest Service to promote community stewardship of federal forests. Members of two of the Idaho groups were surveyed. Among the results, not surprising, people participate if they think it can help them achieve their goals. And that was true for Bill Higgins from the Idaho Forest Group. He's part of the Clearwater Basin Collaborative. His goal has been to secure more trees from the national forests for his company's sawmills.
You know, when we started in Clearwater 10 years ago, the timber program was about 30 million board feet annually. And I'm very, very thankful to say that, our out-year, five-year program on the Nez Clear looks to average about 120 million feet over the next 5 years. So that's essentially a quadrupling of what we were doing 10 years ago.
As Higgins and others were sharing stories, members of several conservation groups, including Janet Torline from the Kootenai Environmental Alliance, were about 3 blocks away. They were preparing for their own event.
We have come together as regional activists that have concerns about the collaborative process.
Among those concerns, the Forest Service is using these collaboratives as a way to circumvent its normal public process as it develops projects. Torline says the collaboratives are often by invitation only. And when conservation groups do join, they sometimes find the collaboratives aren't serving their needs. Karen Coulter is the director of the Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project in eastern Oregon. She says she's been involved in 4 collaborative processes around her region.
The vision statement, which we helped create, or the mission statement, said that the collaborative group would work towards common ground among all participants, that it would include a diverse range of the full spectrum of so-called stakeholders, that it would operate on the basis of full consensus, that environmental protective sidebars would be established, that they'd be working towards ecologically sound restoration with economics only a byproduct. And all of that basically went out the window.
Coulter says the group was stacked with Forest Service and timber industry representatives. The meetings were a significant drive away and becoming more of a burden to attend. The groups didn't have enough people to staff them. There wasn't enough of a benefit, so they dropped out. That was a common complaint, incidentally, in the National Forest Foundation study. Beyond that, critics of collaboration, such as Janet Torline, look at the projects that come from these processes and say the environment usually loses.
The unfortunate part that happens on a lot of these projects is they're touted as restoration, but when you look at the funding and where the money's applied, there's a tiny, tiny percentage that's actually going to true restoration, like decommissioning roads and eliminating fish barriers.
Their mantra is follow the money. Mike Bader, who represents the Flathead Lolo Bitterroot Citizen Task Force in northwestern Montana, says his state senator, John Tester, has proposed a bill that would give collaborative groups a much greater standing in helping to shape Forest Service projects. He believes timber companies are sometimes given preferential treatment in logging projects, and says collaborators, including conservation groups, are getting federal grants to fund their work.
We just think they've gotten an inordinate amount of power and influence that is balkanizing the national forest system, because what happens is every collaborative has their own way of doing things and getting around the rules, and pretty soon the whole national forest is a management mishmash.
This discussion about collaborations has split traditional allies in the conservation community. Those in the anti-camp shake their heads at the organizations such as the Nature Conservancy and the Idaho Conservation League for signing on to a process they think will be damaging to the forests. Back at the collaboration conference, I asked Mike Peterson of the Lands Council about that.
Your predecessors as head of your organization, I'm guessing, are probably not real happy with the direction that you're taking in this. Is that correct? And
right.
How? And what do you think about that?
And I actually had a friend, well, a colleague of mine go, Mike, you've changed. And I kind of went, you haven't changed. And there's people stuck in the same old rhetoric. And I would ask those people, it's like, wow, in the Colville, we protect all the old growth. We have all these projects improving fishery habitat. The old growth's still standing. Roadless areas are, not only they haven't entered them, but everyone in the collaborative, including the timber industry, supports protecting those roadless areas. Things have changed, yeah.
Whether that change is for the better is in the eye of the beholder.